Hey everyone, this is Mark and Matt from TheLaughButton.com. We're happy to announce that we'll be joining the Riotcast Network with our brand new Comedy News podcast.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about all the latest news in the world of comedy. We're going to have comedians on the show. We're going to have some discussion. We're going to do some interviews. We're going to review things. We're going to be talking about pretty much anything happening in the comedy world, covered on TheLaughButton.com. And we'll be debuting clips along the way, too.
All right, join us weekly for the Laugh Button podcast on the Riotcast Network.
You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
What's up? Richie here. This is Band Geek episode 33. This is a recap of the NAMM show. NAMM stands for National Association of Music Merchants. They have two huge conventions every year. The winter one is the biggest one, and that's in Anaheim. And I've been attending that since 1994. So this year I was there as part of my day job with American Musical Supply, but I was also there playing a show with Blue Oyster Cult, so I was wearing two hats, and I'm going to go over all of that. I'll give you a recap of the cool star-studded PV 50th anniversary event that we played, and also we'll talk about some of the new products that I saw at NAMM. There's some really cool stuff coming out, and some of which I will be buying, so I'm very excited to talk about that. This one's just me and Andy, and at the end of the show, we take a Facebook request and we play a song together, so it was a lot of fun, and I really enjoyed talking about gear and stuff, and I know I have a lot of gear fanatics listening to the show, so this was cool for me, and hopefully it'll be cool for you. If you want to support the show, please go to our Amazon link. That's at www.riotcast.com/bandgeek. At the top of the page, you'll see an Amazon banner, and if you click that before you do your shopping, a small percentage of your purchase will go to supporting our show, and it definitely helps. So please continue to do that, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. One more thing is if you're listening to this on iTunes, please rate and comment on the show, because that's how we get new listeners. If people see it, the show has a good rating, or even if you want to give us a critique, just let us know on there. And also, I have my Twitter, Rich_Castellano, at Rich_Castellano. And I'm on Facebook and all that stuff. So hit us up and let us know what you think. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Band Geek, a special one-on-one episode.
Intimate.
I said special again. Crap.
A very intimate episode.
Today it's just Andy and I. Andy Escalise is my co-host. Or maybe you'll be the host today.
Oh, okay.
And I just went to the NAMM convention. That's National Association of Music Merchants. And the NAMM convention, what it's supposed to be, is all the manufacturers of musical gear, they get together and they rent out convention space in a huge convention center, and they show their new product line. And the idea behind that is the buyers or the store owners, whether it be like something like my dad's store, who's like a small business, or whether it be a huge company like American Musical Supply, who sends an army of staff to that convention, they go and look at the new products and they know what to buy for the coming year. And they also offer certain incentives. Like there are NAMM incentives. Mm-hmm. Like if you buy, you know, this at NAMM, you get a deal, or you get this special model, or we'll throw in this. There's all these different things. That's how it works.
And the big thing is also the FaceTime that the reps have with the store owners and purchasers, the buyers.
Right.
You know, it's a relationship that you
but it's also involved. It's also like a convenience, because, you know, rather than like when a rep comes to your store, you know, say it's a guitar rep.
Right.
Say Ibanez, right? Mm-hmm. Ibanez comes to your store and they have the guy can bring three guitars with him maybe.
Right.
But what if they've released 20 guitars that year? There's no way you're going to see them all and play them all.
And basses and tuners and pedals and
right.
everything
else. You can't really get a feel for it. What's happened to the NAMM show, and this is not to sound like a back in my day rant, which this might become, but it's sort of gone the way of Comic-Con. Like, because you know, Comic-Con was just like an industry thing,
right.
and now it's like a happening. You know what I mean? No, but now it's more of a consumer show because they started letting visitors in, and instead of sort of discouraging that, a lot of the vendors have encouraged it by pandering to them.
Right.
So they'll have like artist signings, performances, appearances, giveaways, and that creates like chaos.
Right.
And you know, bad stuff happens. Like, you know, first of all, something really shitty happened this year. If anybody follows this, Ernie Ball, which is a Music Man, which is the company I endorse, they got their new prototype guitar stolen off the floor.
Really?
Yeah, they had the new John Petrucci JP15.
Wow.
Gorgeous guitar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Stolen right off the floor because there's too much chaos going on at the show.
Wow.
You know what I mean? They had their booth was packed. And, you know, I get it from a marketing standpoint, like a, because you want people making a buzz, you want people Instagramming and Twittering and all this stuff.
Right.
Sorry, tweeting. You know, oh my God, this is awesome, this new guitar is great, blah, 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 blah. But you also invite that element because you can't keep an eye on all your shit.
Right.
All the time. So that's...
And security is usually tight there.
But think about how many people are there just like pushing their way through it. I mean, you've been to a couple NAMM shows. I've been going to the NAMM show since I was 13. My first one was 1994. And I was hooked. I've been almost every year. I might have missed 3 or 4 years in the last 22 years since I started going.
Right.
So I've been to about 20 NAMM shows.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that with this, I mean, I think at this point maybe they should just call it what it is. It's a consumer show.
Right.
Because it's almost impossible to get business done there. I mean, although there is something cool to be said, like the vibe is like sort of like electric because all these people are there and they're excited. But like, it would be one thing if people were excited about like, oh my God, here's this new pedal I've been waiting for. But a lot of people are excited like, oh, Nikki Sixx is signing at this booth.
Right. Exactly.
And it's like, okay, you know what I mean? But it turns into a fan convention.
Yeah.
Like Comic-Con.
And it's always funny because I remember one of the years we went, we were checking out the Moog stuff.
Yeah.
And like, there's all these people with headphones checking out all this thing. And Bob Moog is standing over there by himself. and I'm like, what's wrong with you people? The guy's right there.
Yeah.
That's his name.
You know, I was...
But they're more excited about, like you said, like all the other people.
Yeah. I had like a moment... where I was trying to do a video interview, and I'll get into that more. I was doing a video interview, and there was like this little 13-year-old kid that like started playing a keyboard in the middle of my video as I'm like talking about the keyboard.
Right.
And I'm like, oh man, this freaking kid just. I'm like, I bet I did that to like 10 different people at any given NAMM. Like when I was probably so fucking annoying. But I just remember like, my dad telling me one year. When I was little, he goes, okay, do you want to go to Disney or do you want to go to the NAMM show? And I said, the NAMM show.
There you go.
No question about it. And I just remember my first NAMM show going there, and it was a lot smaller back then, but I just remember going to every single booth.
Uh-huh.
Like, most 13-year-old kids would be like, I'm going to stay with my dad. I'm going to do this. I was like, okay, see you guys later. And I was just so into it. Like, I wanted to know about everything. Like, if there was a company that made cymbal stand felts, I wanted to know about them. And I wanted to know about every single variety of felt that they had. Oh, you make a gray one? You make a black one. You make big ones? You make small ones. You know what I mean? And I just did all that. Like, and I was all into, like, the free stuff. Like, I won a splash from Meinl cymbals.
Oh, nice.
I was like, oh, I have a splash cymbal. I couldn't play drums, but I had a splash cymbal. So I was all about it, and I loved the NAMM show.
I remember you also had you did have wait in line for get some autographs.
Oh yeah, yeah, I did. But it wasn't like it is now. Like we waited in line to meet Chris Squire.
Right.
You and I. And that was like 15 minutes, right. Maybe 20 minutes. Now it's like wrap around the booth multiple times, you know, 3 hour wait.
Right.
You know, and they had to move companies like the Anaheim Convention Center, where it is huge. So they've had to move like high traffic companies to like different parts of the building. Like
so basically, the lines Gibson, don't inter-
yeah, basically cross. Gibson and Fender have their own freaking floor,
right?
At this point, because of all the traffic going in there. So it's and now like Yamaha isn't even in the convention center,
right? They're in the hotel.
They're in
right?
a Marriott right outside the convention center. But that's a huge company. You know, they got tons of stuff.
I remember last time I went, they had like you know 40 grand pianos like there.
Yeah, it's insane. But usually like the NAMM show I would go to just for pleasure. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'd go with my dad's store as representative and you know, like I would go cause it was a fun thing to do.
Right.
And then like my dad or my sister Nicole runs my dad's music store pretty much at this point. And so she'd be like, hey, go play this guitar or go try this amp out. And let me know if you think it's something that we can sell.
And
so,
that's exactly what the NAMM show is for.
Yeah, that's what I would do. I would just go and give my two cents. I'd be like, oh yeah, like so. For example, like when the Black Star amps first came out, I'm like, okay, maybe this doesn't have enough gain for a metalhead, but a kid that likes rock would really like this amp. So you know, that's the kind of feedback I'd provide. You know, because like my dad has a very specific taste in guitars and amps, so. He'll cater more towards like the guys in his age group who like playing blues, classic rock, you know, R&B, and he knows what they want. But I, you know, being a teacher for so many years, teaching young kids and teenagers,
you know what the kids want.
I know what they want. I said, you know, this kid's gonna want like face melting distortion.
Right, and you also have to keep in mind your customers. You have a clientele that isn't looking for a vintage mandolin or something.
Right. It's funny because when you have one of the benefits of having like a smaller business is you actually know all your customers face to face. So like I know, oh, this person would buy this.
Right.
And this person's looking for something like this. So right. I know I can sell this.
Right.
You know, so you're also kind of going there as a representative for your customers. Like, you know, because if you know you have a customer that's been looking for something, like, you know, I've been looking for an amp that I can also plug my acoustic into.
Right.
You know what I mean? A guitar amp that also sounds good in the acoustic. Well, if I was at the show, I'm going to say Black Star again, but if I saw the Black Star Beam, which is a new product they have that you can plug an electric guitar and an acoustic guitar into, and it's designed for that, I would know that I should buy one of these because this customer is interested in that. So,
and you also give feedback to the companies with, you know, not that you're able to design a product for them, but you could say, you know what, these are selling really good and these aren't selling very good in my area.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, I've always had a hard time doing that. Like I always feel like weird about giving feedback.
Right.
You know, but, I mean, my dad doesn't and my bosses at AMS don't. I just always felt weird. But see, this year, it was actually, I found it to be actually really difficult to conduct business at the NAMM show. I mean, I was there to do business and it was tough because of all the pandemonium. You know what I mean?
Well, you were there doing business that you, not business that you used to do. So this is like new, this is your second NAMM show doing this new job, right? What exactly are you doing?
Well, let me back it up a second because when I started going to the NAMM show, or when you and I first went, we were going just as you know, observers,
right?
And we'd go, and we were really there, not even to meet people. Like, sure, if a guy like Keith Emerson is doing an appearance, I want a picture with him.
Right.
But most of it's like, oh, this new amp, this new keyboard, this new guitar, I gotta play it.
And like you said, we were still kind of giving feedback to your dad and stuff, you know.
Right, but also my dad's store at that point was pretty small, so he couldn't have every Ernie Ball guitar on the rack. So that was a good opportunity for me to go there and try out stuff instead of saying, hey, order this for me and I might like it or I might not like it.
Right.
Because, you know, like we were talking about this before, like it's really difficult to buy something, especially a musical instrument that you're going to have a personal connection with.
A wooden musical instrument.
Yeah, but what about a keyboard? Like, don't you want to know how it feels before you plop down $1,000?
You do. Definitely.
You do. So that's, you know, that's why it was a good, that's what I went for. But then, but I was always like envious of guys who were part of it. You know what I mean? Like, wow, right. look at this guy. He's a demonstrator for, like I used to know this guy, Paul Kramer, who was a demonstrator for Korg. And as a kid, I just thought this was the coolest fucking dude. Like, he gets to just sit here and shred all day.
Right.
And I thought that was the coolest thing. And then there were the guys that were performing like on the stages. And I thought, oh, wow, that's got to be awesome. Like, that was like my goal. You know what I mean? Like, I want to like perform on an AM stage.
Right.
And then as soon as I did all those things, I was like, wow, this sucks. Like, I mean, look.
One day I'll be the guy signing those glossy 8x10s.
Because, well, the more stuff you do at NAMM, the less time you have to enjoy NAMM. And this year was like the worst. Let me back up and rephrase this. Playing at NAMM is a huge honor, and I'm very appreciative to do it, and I love it. But it's very stressful because of the nature of the chaos. It's a chaotic event.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're like trying to schedule, you know, sound checks, and they're all star jams,
right?
You know, everything's you're gonna have this guy from this company
because everyone's there,
right? But the problem is everybody else is busy, so you have to like try to, you know, coordinate everybody's schedules. It's a big fucking pain in the ass,
right?
And so it just turns into chaos. I mean, I first started playing at NAMM. When it was, they did this thing called the NAMM Jam, the All-Star NAMM Jam, and Tommy Zvonchek, who was Blue Oyster Cult's keyboard player for a while, he was the musical director of it. And I believe I might be telling this wrong, but I believe he reached out to Buck and said, can you please come play a couple songs at this? And Buck picked, I think, Burnin' For You and Buck's Boogie. But the problem is that he wasn't going to get there for the rehearsal. He was just going to get there for the show.
Okay.
So he asked me, can you do me a favor and go to this rehearsal and teach these guys my songs?
Okay.
I said, yeah. Because, and especially when I looked at the roster, I'm like, oh my God, like Spencer Davis, Alan White.
Right.
I'm going to get to like jam, even if it's just at a rehearsal.
Alan White. I waited in line at NAMM to get his autograph.
Right. I'm going to get to jam with him. Like, even if it's just like to rehearse, yeah, I'm in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, or like Bobby Kimball from Toto, like all these guys. I'm like, yeah, I'm in. I'm in. I'll do it. So I go down to this rehearsal, which is in like one of the side rooms at NAMM. And there's like all these people here. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to get to play with Alan White. I'm going to get to play with Liberty DeVito.
Right, right.
And I'm just like flipping out. So I'm just waiting there. I get there on time, but you know, they're doing everybody else's songs. So what happened is all these like rock star guys, they go there to play their own song, but then they're expected to play and back up other people on their songs.
That's the jam part of it.
But none of them really learned each other's songs. So they're sitting there going like,
and they never really had to learn anyone else's song,
right?
Either.
So for example, I'm probably telling this horribly out of sequence, but just for example, like Bobby Kimball would come up and say, hey, I want to do Hold the Line. So there's like a room full of like famous guitar players and bass players and like, who knows who learned Hold the Line? And Tommy would look around and no one would raise their hand, and I'd sheepishly like sort of like inch my hand up like, well, I know it. And he's like, all right, you play it for now. Right, I was like, okay, so I'll play Hold the Line for now. Then Joe Vitale wants to do Get Back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Get Back, that's an easy one. Anybody know the guitar lead in Get Back?
No.
Silence. And this me again, I sheepishly raise my hand. I can grab that if you want. Okay, for now, you play this for now.
For now, right? Until we get the bigger name.
Yeah, and then Alan White goes, okay, we're going to do Owner of Lonely Heart. Who could play that?
No one.
Same thing.
Right,
it's
right.
Like, okay, you play this for now. And then, so, like, basically the whole rehearsal goes, we haven't even gotten to a Blue Oyster Cult song
right.
yet. I've played every fucking song because no one else did any homework,
right?
I played every song, and then Tommy goes up to me, he goes, you should just play. He's like, you should just show up and play. So I'm like, all right. So I had no guitar, no amp, I had nothing, right? So, I remember I had to like run around to all the companies and like I borrowed a PV, I borrowed an Ernie Ball, you know
nice.
What I mean? I borrowed all these things. And then, you know, I taught everybody the Blue Oyster Cult song. And of course, Buck picked like Bucks Boogie, which is like the hardest song to learn. So like I'm doing like it's funny, like I'm giving like Liberty DeVito like visual cues. I'm like, right. I was like, this is a guy I watched on VH1 and MTV when I was a kid.
Madison
like,
Square Garden. Yeah,
religiously. And here I am like going like, follow me. You know, like, look at me.
It was something's not right.
Very weird. But I loved it. And they kept calling me to do it. And I was super excited.
Because you knew all the songs.
Right. But that first year was just, I showed up and I just played.
Right.
But the next year, they're like, hey, we want you to be part of the band. Here's a list of 30 songs.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, what did I do? So now it's like a homework thing. And then
now
like,
you had to learn songs.
Right. Yeah. And then like the rehearsal was like an all day thing. So that burned a day of the show. Look, I'm like not complaining.
Right.
I'm just saying like it was what it was. Like it was a great honor to play, but then it burned a day. But another thing, as I got more comfortable and people started to know who I was because of BOC or the YouTube videos or just being at the NAMM show and playing.
The previous NAMM
year. There was one year where I said, you know what? I want to play with my band because like I'm always like fitting in and trying to get a pickup band together. And look, being a professional musician and doing a pickup band, to have the ability to do that is great. If you could just if you're good enough to just meet with a bunch of musicians and you can make music instantly and it sounds like something, you're good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because not everybody can do that.
Yeah.
But after like that, I feel like that wears on you. Like because you're like, this is not really as good as it can be.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like we're getting it done. We're getting away with it.
Right.
But it's not like
and
tight.
People don't really notice it because we're all celebrities up here. So it does. Well, they're not even listening to it. You know. Like,
yeah. It's all spectacle.
Yeah.
But so I said I want to bring my band. Of course, I didn't have a band. But it's like I want to make a band. So I sort of like made some calls, and one year we put together a band. And this was a great band. It was Jules on drums, Danny on bass, you on keyboards, me on guitar.
Amory on vocals,
and we had my dad on guitar and Buck on guitar. That was a good band.
That was a good band.
Yeah, and we did like all the stuff we wanted to do, and then
that band has played before.
Yes. And for me, it was a cool thing because my dad said, like, in 35 or 40 years of going to the NAMM show, he never got to play, so he was so excited to play, and he got to play with Guitar Shorty, and he. And he did awesome. My dad killed. I was like, Dad, they're doing an hour of blues. Here's the guitar. Have fun. I'm going to not play this.
Hey, that's what Jules said to me with the drumsticks.
Oh, yeah. So you played that whole set.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Like, hey, take the drumsticks. I'll be back.
Yeah. I don't get that. Like, why would you? We got there. We get to play. I don't want to play anymore. Whatever. Okay. But so that was like one thing. And, you know, playing, and that added a little bit of stress to it because now you got to get instruments, so you got to bring your guitar on the plane. But then I got to the point where like, hey, we want you to do this song with crazy effects. Can you grab these effects? Okay, let me program my processor. Let me figure out a way to throw it in my suitcase. I'll bring the guitar, and it just made like a sort of like a vacation to me, a very stressful event, but I was happy to do it. Then
in the flood of chaos of millions of people waiting in line and making noise and everything.
Right. So then
it's not the nicest work environment.
So then I started working for American Musical Supply and Zounds as their video correspondent.
Coming to you live.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey guys, Richie here at NAMM 2015. We're at the PV booth with Michael. Michael, tell us what's new this year. So yeah, that's what I did. But look, it's cool. I like doing it. But the problem is now...
Well, it's basically what you were doing as a kid, but with a camera in front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're actually able to talk
to the
guy more.
It's a good thing I don't
have
a camera in front of me with all the things I did when I was a kid. But anyway, but the only difference is...
And you get to interview the guys and stuff.
Yeah,
you know, get a little bit more insight than when you were a kid. Yeah, play, go play.
Yeah, go away, know. Kid.
Go away, kid.
But the weird thing is as soon as I started working for AMS, all of a sudden BOC had things to do during NAMM. I'm like, I've been doing this band for 8 years, and we've never had anything to do during
That's
NAMM.
That's right. Last year,
we had two gigs
in California.
In California.
We were driving
it was crazy.
Back and forth.
I made that work, but this year we were actually playing at NAMM. So before I go into like products, let's talk about that show, because that was actually really cool. Jules and Kasim couldn't be at NAMM this year, so we got... Bobby Rondinelli to come back, and Bobby from two band geeks ago, And Rudy Sarzo was with the band. So it was like a weird, like, super duper configuration of BOC. And we played, and we basically, for me, here was my day. I went to, went to the show, covered the show all day as a video correspondent, right?
Okay.
Ran back to my room, edited, because we had to have stuff up that night. So right. I edited audio. I edited as much as I could. So at 3 o'clock, I was in my hotel room editing like a fucking madman.
Wow.
Like boom, 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 boom. As soon as I saw 4 o'clock, I ran down to the Hilton Ballroom for sound check. And we had a very chaotic sound check because this is a band that hasn't really played together too much. I think we did 2 gigs with that configuration.
Okay. And that was 10 years ago.
Yeah, it was like 5-6 years ago or something. So, getting everybody up to snuff. Also, we're not playing on our gear.
Right.
So the monitors are weird. Everything's weird. So we had that.
There was no BOC crew there.
Right. So then we did that sound check. Then I run back up to the room, and actually Don and Eric came with me, and I said, if you want a place to change, I have a room here.
Okay.
We came back to my room. So while they're changing, I edited more. So they're like, changing their clothes, and I'm like on the computer, like going crazy, and I got like the rest of my videos done, and I handed it to the video guy who was sharing a room with me. Like, here you go. Here's an SD card with all the all the audio for today. Then went and did the gig. The gig was cool because the backstage was an interesting hang because the other band that was playing was this like weird Skinnerd sort of thing. It was like three of the guys from Skinnerd, Ricky Medlock, Gary Rossington, and Keys. I think the guy's name is Keys. He's a keyboard player or something. But anyway, he was really good. On drums, Kenny Aronoff, and on bass, Michael Anthony from Van Halen. So I'm like, that was a pretty cool setup. Oh, and I'm sorry, on slide guitar, like lead slide guitar, Robert Randolph.
Awesome.
Yeah. So it was a cool band. So we're hanging out with all those guys.
And they're playing the same show.
Yeah, yeah.
We
were the first act, they were the second act.
This is the PV...
PV 50th anniversary concert.
There you go.
So it was cool to play with them, but it was even cooler to do like the hang backstage.
Right, yeah.
So, everybody's trading war stories, telling, and also it's always fun to hang out with Bobby and Rudy.
Yeah,
so we did that whole thing, and we did the show, and the show came out great. I thought, it was loud.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, as I'm walking to the stage to play the show, I didn't realize this, but AMS had a table at the gig, and I look back and I see all the guys from AMS, and I'm like, this is weird. It's like when you go to the mall and you see your teacher. So it was like, oh my God, it was like my two jobs. Like
your two jobs.
Collided.
Yeah.
I was like, I have to like dance around an idiot for the guys from the office. It was so funny. But we did the show and it was great. And the Skinnerd guys were awesome. And I brought my boss from AMS backstage to take a picture with me and Eric.
Oh, nice.
So I was like, the men who own my soul.
Your two bosses.
Yeah, exactly. So that was the gig. So now
that sounds great.
Yeah, it was fun, but I went right from I took off my video hat and put on the rock hat and went right to it, and and I'm fried, and like I don't think the guys in the band realized why it was like so like jittery and like okay, but anyway,
and it's not like you could stay up late and party because you have to go back to work again the next day.
And the next day we had our early like meeting with Gibson, so it was like. Anyway, so let's talk about stuff now. I mean, we talked about like the NAMM show and what it means to me, but let's talk about gear.
New gear. What's new for 2015?
I don't know. No, honestly, I do know, but when I'm like sitting there like worrying about camera angle
and making,
clipping on the audio,
getting the right shots,
and my appointments, and it's like you sort of like kind of tune stuff out, or I forget it as soon as I'm done with it. But basically, I found a nice method for doing this. I look at my schedule of what I shot,
right,
and then I can remember what I looked at.
Okay.
So, all right. First thing I want to talk about is, I guess I could say this now. I hope they don't sue me. I've been beta testing something, kind of secretly. and I couldn't talk about it, but I can talk about it now because it was revealed at the show. So I'll start with this. Line 6, which is a company that sponsors our show, they released a foot pedal called the Firehawk. That is really awesome, and I think I'm going to start using it with the band.
Awesome.
The Firehawk. Oh, what's this? Happen to have right here.
Oh, look at that. Wow. There it is.
Here's a Firehawk. If you want to see what it looks like, just go to line6.com.
And there's a video of you playing it.
Actually, there's one on American Musical Supply.
I saw that, yeah.
So, okay, Firehawk. This is really cool. I mean, you can't see this because this is an audio podcast, but Andy, you can see this. I have the Pod HD 500X here and the Firehawk. They basically do the same thing, okay?
They look a little bit different, but it's...
They do.
The inside's pretty much the same.
Well, they have a lot of the same models. Like, okay. All the HD amps and effects, or most of them are in the Firehawk.
Okay.
I love the Pod because it's easy to edit, and you can edit on the computer.
Right. Well, wait, you just said two things. It's easy to edit.
And you can edit on the computer, which is nice because, you know, I've had my first rack set up. It took me like a half hour to make a sound.
Right.
You know, on the Pod, whether I'm using the computer or the screen, I can make a sound in like a couple minutes.
Right.
What this new one does, the Firehawk, you can make it with your iOS device. In fact, it has there's no big LCD screen on here. Mm. You kind of need to use the iOS device.
Okay.
Or Android or your computer.
Right.
But
that's awesome.
Yeah. So for me, like
is it just for editing sounds, or you could do stuff on the fly if you have like your iPad like mounted to?
You could, eventually with when we go on the road, like I would like to have like my iPad sort of discreetly placed on my stand, because whenever I have to adjust something in the middle of a gig, I have to bend down and it's hard to see.
Right.
Like, I would rather have my iPad right there and just be like, shh. Even if it was mounted by the keyboard rig, sort of like, so the audience couldn't see it, like that would still be helpful to me to not have to keep bending over every time I wanted to edit a sound. But I also like it because you don't have to be hunched over all the time.
I could attest to, Richie before some BOC gigs sitting cross-legged on the floor in front of his pedals adjusting his sounds.
Another thing that's really cool is on the Pod HD 500X and a lot of other floorboards, you have to memorize where all of your presets are.
Right.
This is color-coded.
Oh, okay.
There's illuminated LED rings around each button, and different colors represent different effects. If I'm remembering this correctly, I think red is or orange is Stompbox. Red, blue is modulation.
Right.
You know what I mean, like stuff like that.
Red's,
I think,
reverb,
green is delay,
right.
And even when the effect is not activated, it's a dimly lit ring.
Oh.
So you could
see it in the dark.
Right. I mean, on like a Boss pedal board, you don't see what the words say all the time. You say, okay, my chorus is blue.
Right.
My delay is white. You know what I mean? You know it by colors of what it looks like.
I mean, on the 500, was it? It's just A, B, C, right?
Yeah, but on the 500, there's a view thing that you can press, and it shows you what effects are assigned to which foot switches.
Okay.
But it's tiny.
But like, you're not gonna.
Yeah, but this is color coded.
Great.
I mean, so basically it doesn't have all the functionality of the Pod. I mean, it doesn't have the digital outputs.
Okay.
It doesn't have the microphone input. You know, it's
so yeah. it's kind of
it's a little stripped down.
It's a little bit more straightforward with the ability to use your iOS device to edit.
Right, but it also supports the Variax.
Perfect.
Which is what brings you to the next thing. I believe Line 6 and Yamaha merged. So now there's a more inexpensive Variax.
Okay.
And it's a Yamaha guitar. So if you were never a fan of like the James Tyler,
because
that's like a specific kind of guitar.
Okay.
You know, the Yamaha one is more of like a wide
Yamaha's been making guitars for a long time.
Right, but it's more of a plain guitar.
Right.
You know what I mean? It doesn't have like a weird neck profile. It's got a flatter, like sort of regular Fender-y profile to it.
Okay.
And I thought it was quite good, the new Variax. They also did a really clever wireless that I really liked. Which now the new Line 6 wirelesses, you can have two guitars connected to it.
I was looking at that.
Yeah, so you can, and it's foot switchable, so you hit the pedal and you could switch it. Now here's the other thing. You don't have to turn, if you're doing a gig,
okay.
You don't know, and now using two wirelesses wireless packs with one receiver is not a new thing.
Right.
People do that.
You have to turn one on, turn the other one off.
You don't have to do that anymore.
Exactly.
Now you put it on the stand, and it after 30 seconds of inactivity, it goes into standby mode, power saving,
okay.
And then you just hit the button. The other thing is it has a built-in DI. So if you're like a guy that goes back and forth between acoustic and electric, you can set it up so when you play your acoustic, it goes out the DI, and when you play your electric, it goes out the quarter inch.
Ah.
So it's very, very slick. Also, they took the antennas off it. The antennas are internal.
Okay.
And it's smaller now, so it's actually pedal-sized.
The G30 had internal antennas and a smaller thing, so they probably went with that.
Right. Yeah. So there's that. So that's all. I mean, I think there was more stuff from Line 6, but that's all that like sort of stood out for me.
That's very cool.
Our other company that we love, Audio-Technica, had some new stuff. They did a rack mount version of their System 10.
Okay.
And really cool thing. Now, when you mount a wireless somewhere,
right,
you have to do those extension antennas.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Paddles.
You see that the giant paddle on the stage.
Paddle, yeah.
You know, at a gig, but that type of technology was designed for analog wireless.
Correct.
For digital wireless, you can't do that. So what they did is, instead of making it so you have to put a paddle, they made these little, in each of the System 10 rack mounts, you push a button and the whole antenna assembly pops out.
Oh, really?
And you connect it with a Cat5 cable. I think it can go up to like 200 or 300 feet or something. And you can put the antenna anywhere. It's
right.
Tiny.
Wow.
It's like a little like cigarette pack.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? And it can go anywhere. So, and that's just a, and normally those like, those wireless cables, they're expensive.
Right.
But Cat5 cable is cheap.
Exactly.
So now you can get
it. It's a new world now.
Yeah, Ethernet. If you don't know what Cat5 is, it's just Ethernet cable.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really slick. They also have new headphones, which are like really nice studio versions of these that we're wearing now. I think they're called the 70Xs, like the ATH M70X, if I'm not mistaken. So that was that. Let me take a look at my schedule again and see what was next that day. Okay, here's another big thing I saw, and might be interesting to you. A lot of the companies, the drum companies, are doing triggers.
Oh, okay.
But they're like, now, triggering was a pain in the ass for a long time.
Right.
Because of the amount of gear. The gear was big, it was bulky, a lot of wires, you know, and it's something you had to do. You know
right,
what I mean? It's something
yeah.
like, I need to research this. Now they're making it a lot easier. They're making products for that. Because they recognize that a lot of cover band drummers or like
right.
wedding band drummers or just, you know.
Well, it's just the music scene in general is, you know, there's a lot more of electronic elements going into rock music and pop music.
Yeah.
You know.
So they're recognizing that's changing. So they're making these triggers that integrate into your acoustic kit. I mean, it's drummers on the whole don't like electronic drums.
Right.
They don't. They like playing acoustic drums.
Yeah,
but
and when you had triggers, it was a pain in the neck to it's like a whole nother system.
Yeah,
like once you set up your drum set, then you have to get the triggers out. Then you have to wire all that up to a brain.
Now they're making like smaller brains. You know what I mean?
Right.
And better triggers. So Yamaha had one. Roland had one. Roland had like a tom module.
Okay.
Which was tiny. You know what I mean? Like, it's tiny enough that you can place it like on a drum stand.
Right.
You don't have to like run 20-foot cables to something else that's going to sit next to you. Like, you can make it part of your rig
right.
permanently. And I mean, what? And
I know some of them make like a two trigger brain for just like kick and snare and
right,
stuff.
Right. Right. There's a lot of that, and also the Octopad.
Right.
So that was another trend I was witnessing, and just because. You know, every other musician, like if as a guitar player, if I want another sound, I can get a pedal.
Right.
A keyboard player can get a new keyboard, or they can pull up a patch right. or whatever, or a soft synth.
You're not going to change your snare drum in the middle
Drummers
of the
are
set.
Screwed.
Yeah.
But what this guy did in his demo, this was the Roland guy. I have this demo. If you want to check out any of these products I'm talking about, go to YouTube and check out the American Musical Supply NAMM playlist. I posted it on my Facebook, so you can check it out. But these are all the products I'm mentioning. He said, here's my drum set here, but I don't want this drum set. I want to use my drum set from home. So he loaded a sample kit with all of his drums from
home.
Wow. Yeah. He goes, now I can have this. He goes, or say I want to do, you know, he did Uptown Funk.
And this is a acoustic kit with triggers.
That's it. That's all it is.
Wow. And
yeah, so it's pretty slick. So that's one, you know, direction I see a lot of the drum companies going in, that drummers are now starting to get more active in. Hello? Oh, sorry. What is going on today? Drummers are starting to get more active in participating in tech.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think that's great.
Yeah.
When you're mixing a record, the drum sound shapes the whole sound of the record.
Yeah.
Like, that's the biggest, to me, that's the most important thing. Like, if you have big drums, it's a big sounding record. Small drums, it's small sounding. That's like the whole basis. But when you do a gig, you got one drum sound.
Right.
That's it. So, you know, if you show up to a gig with a cocktail kit and they say, okay, we're doing Pour Some Sugar on Me, you're going to sound like shit.
Yeah.
So it's sort of cool that drummers now could say, okay, I have this tiny kit that I do jazz gigs with, but okay, you need 80s kit? Let me just press a button. There you go. Right. 80s kits come through the PA system.
Exactly. And you're still getting to play your acoustic kit that you like. That you're familiar with and know how.
Roland is doing this thing. Speaking of Roland, they're doing this thing with plugouts.
Okay.
They have the Era system, which is the new like keyboards that look like Tron.
Oh, okay.
But nice. What you could do is you buy a plug out, and it's software that transforms every single slider on the keyboard to behave like an old keyboard.
Ah.
So you buy this thing, it's software, and it turns the their keyboard into an SH-101.
Oh, nice.
Or whatever, Prophet or...
their old keyboards.
You know, Juno, like the old Roland keyboards.
Right, right.
So, you know, So it's cool. So now every single knob and slider is what would be on an SH-101, for example. And the extra sliders that aren't used in SH-101 go dark.
Oh, nice.
So now you not only have a virtual instrument, but every single... It behaves exactly like the original. And the other thing is... You can store plugouts, so you can have your regular sounds on that Era keyboard. But then, if you say, you know what, I always want to have this SH-101 with me, and I want to bring my laptop, you can store one plugout in there.
Oh, that's
and
awesome!
Hit a button and say, okay, now it's an SH-101.
Yeah, that's I see. That's the as far as keyboards, the future of keyboards. It's all going to be these virtual instruments because all the virtual instruments are now they're all samples of the old stuff,
right.
Or the original thing. You know, you pull up a software on your computer and it's a real piano, you know, it's a real sampled piano.
Oh, yeah. Peavy had some cool stuff. They make like these micro heads that are like low watt versions of the big heads, and they sound pretty good.
Okay.
We'll just do a 6505. It sounded like a 6505. It was it was good. But another thing they did is they sort of redid the Viper system to work with their auto-tune guitar. Do you remember that auto-tune guitar?
I think so.
They have like a guitar. I think it has like the Antares tech in it. It's cheap though. So it's a self-tuning guitar, but you can also do alternate tunings by like holding down certain frets while you play.
Okay.
So for example, if you want...
You could do like capo stuff without...
Exactly, or drop tunings or stuff like that. Yeah. So, but they're using that because there's modeled pickups in that and modeled guitar sounds. So they're doing sort of like what Line 6 did with the Dream Rig.
Mm-hmm.
But they have it with the Viper amp, and the Viper amp now comes with this like crazy foot controller, right?
Okay.
And this guitar going with the multi-pin connection or MIDI. I don't remember what the connection was, but in the same way with the Dream Rig, you can go like from acoustic 12 string to Strat through an AC30 to like, you know, Les Paul with a Marshall drop tuned.
Right.
You can do that. So, I mean, it's interesting. So I guess at that point it's like, are you a PV guy? Are you a Line 6 guy? Whatever you're used to using. But the nice thing about...
Are you a Fender guy or a Gibson guy?
Right. Yeah. The nice thing about the PV thing, though, was kind of inexpensive.
Okay.
But the competition is pretty good still because Line 6 dropped the price of the Variacs.
Okay.
So it's like really, you got to just pick which one you like using better. They were both good. They were both impressive. Let's move on to the next day here. Okay, a lot of the acoustic companies are doing things with
ukuleles?
That was like 2 years ago. That's so 2 years ago, NAMM. That's so NAMM 2013, man. No, they're doing things with sustainable materials.
Okay.
Like the big tagline is, these woods aren't going to be around forever. Okay. So like Martin did a thing with using smaller pieces of wood on the back, kind of like what they did in like the late 60s, where you'll see like a mosaic on the back of a guitar with you know, so if you like that sort of thing. And Taylor was doing something similar with woods that they that are sustainable and different materials. And the guitars still sound great, obviously.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That was something. You know what? I also tried a new guitar company. Well, not new, but I've never played them before. Did you ever try Reverend Guitars?
That sounds familiar.
Check them out. Reverend Guitars. They make these like, you know, I'll look it up. So listeners, look up Reverend Guitars while I show Andy this link. Like a lot of companies do like straight up Fender copies for the most part. This was sort of like Fender not Fender copies, but like
Fender inspired.
Inspired, but like through a weird prism. You know what I mean?
Okay.
So Reverend Guitars. Here we go. So here we go, Reverend Guitars. ReverendGuitars.com is the company. Here, take a look at these, Andy. So they're like sort of like beefed up, like like comic book versions of Fenders. You know what I mean? They're like super powered Fenders, sort of.
There's a Tele here with a whammy bar.
right. But they make a baritone guitar that's just awesome. It's beautiful.
These look very nice.
Yeah. So I was impressed by that.
And they kind of have their own body shape and
stuff. Yeah, no, they're not Fender, but you know,
they're not.
They're Fender in as far as their bolt-ons.
And I see some Gibson style stuff here too.
Right, but they're bolt-ons. They're not like that's what I mean by Fender, cuz when you think of like bolt-on, that's Fender, glued on, that's Gibson. You know what I mean? So but yeah, they do have some like V-shaped guitars and some set neck guitars, stuff like that. But I really thought these were cool. Getting back to Ernie Ball, that like I said before, the JP15.
Wow.
I want one. Awesome. Maple neck.
Yeah.
It's a Petrucci with a maple neck.
Well, that's the big announcement. Now some of their
just that one. I thought cuz I spoke to my rep
a couple
months ago, and he said they were going to be doing all the models, but it's just a JP.
Cuz
I really wanted to have like a Steve Morse with a maple neck or a Luke with a maple neck. But it's just the JP, and that's his main model for this year. Wow. They also released some other new Petrucci's, like the Majesty.
Okay.
It's like the Artisan series or something. Really beautiful guitars. I mean, I think they do a great job. But of course, I'm there, and Danny Miranda, he's like, go play this bass for me. Go play this. Go try this out. Let me know what it sounds like. And I said, if I try to explain what this bass sounds like to this guy, I'm gonna have to have 50 phone calls. So I had my Zoom recorder with me.
Okay.
So I actually plugged the bass into the Zoom and I played it for him and sent him an email.
Awesome.
Saying, okay, leave me alone. Here's what it sounds like. But he still managed to call me 20 more times with questions.
Nice.
Another thing that happened, and this is me tooting my own horn a little bit, Bobby Rondinelli, who I had to twist his arm to come on the podcast and do food drumming.
Right.
Said, people are coming up to me all day saying, food drumming. I love food drumming. It was so great. Food drumming is hilarious. And now Bobby's like, we got to do more. I want to do this video. I was like, I said, I had to twist your arm to do it. He goes, I knew there was a reason I agreed to come out on the Saturday before Christmas. So the food drumming is very successful. If you haven't seen food drumming, go to our YouTube page, the Band Geek Podcast, and look up food drumming. It's the greatest video ever. It really is. It's probably the greatest musical achievement of 2015 so far. Food drumming. But no, it was a big hit. Everybody's coming up to him and me
saying,
food drumming's fucking awesome. Here's another story. I took the super shuttle from the airport to the hotel room.
Right.
And I'm sitting there with another guy who works at AMS, and we're schmoozing with some of the people there, and they say, you know, what do you do? Video. And I also play with the Oyster Cult. And I gave him my card. And he goes, this name looks familiar to me. Do you play with any other bands besides BOC? I said, not really, but you know what? I have a podcast. That's like my other band. It's called Band Geek. And, you know, we have musicians on. We kind of do goofy stuff. And he goes, that's where I know you. I said, really? You listen to my podcast? He goes, no, someone sent me this stupid video.
No, I don't.
Someone sent me this stupid video of Italian food and drums. I was like, that's me. I'm the stupid video. So.
You listen to the podcast? No. Send me a stupid video.
Let's see. What else happened? Because of Artemis, I'm like really into lights now.
Okay.
So I sort of kept an eye out for lights. Another cool thing I saw was Chavez, that lighting company. Mm-hmm. They make this cool, like, if you can't decide what light to get thing.
Okay.
It's like a bar, right? Okay. It comes with a tripod and a bar. And on the bar are two wash lights.
Okay.
Two spotlights.
Okay.
Built into the bar is a laser and a strobe light. I was like, what's this called? The smorgasbord 5000?
It's the Swiss Army knife.
It was like called the four-bar IRC or four.
Does it have a corkscrew that pops out?
It did, yeah.
The nail file.
It also plays bass. If your bass player quits, there's a bass string, a single bass string on the back of the tripod, and you can play it like a washtub bass. So that was really cool. That's one of the things that kind of stuck out to me.
No, that's this is where you see it. All the innovation.
Orange Amps is making a bass amp now called the Obi-Wan.
Oh, really?
Of course, I went to the booth. I'm like, I said, what's the name of this? They said, oh, it's the Obi-Wan. I was like, Obi-Wan. Obi-Wan. Now, that's a name I've not heard in a long time. And they were looking at me like, no, it's Orange Bass 1, Obi-Wan. I was like, oh, it's not like Obi-Wan. Like, that's not what you mean? So, man, our wives are like hens up there.
I know.
Me and Andy are down in my studio, and our wives are upstairs like just yakking away. Jeez. What the hell are they doing?
I don't know.
Okay, anyway. Korg brought back the ARP Odyssey.
I think I saw something about that.
I have a funny story about that.
Okay.
I'm doing the video for the ARP Odyssey with Rich from Korg. Wonderful guy, great demonstrator, right? And Dr. Lonnie Smith comes in during our video. And you know who Dr. Lonnie Smith is? You gotta know. He's like a famous jazz B3 player.
Okay.
He's the guy with the turban.
Okay.
He's awesome. You know who he is. If you saw a picture of him, you'd know who he was. But he's sick. So he comes in and starts asking a question, and he's like, the guy's like, oh, sorry, we're filming a video now. And I was like, oh, shit. So basically, I said, I'm so sorry, sir, because I know who he is. I love the way he plays. And he was a total gentleman. He's like, oh, no, don't worry about it. Do what you have to do.
I noticed that Korg is doing like a lot of they're going to their legacy instruments.
They made a miniature modular synthesizer, the M20 or the ME20 or something.
Okay.
Forgive me for not remembering the
exact model.
The model number, but it's a little modular synthesizer that you can like patch. It's like a, you know.
Right,
If you don't know what a modular synthesizer is, it's like, if you've ever seen ELP, it's that big fucking thing with wires sticking
and
out of it.
I think Moog is also doing that too.
I didn't get to go to the Moog booth and I'm pissed.
I was just online. I think I saw something like that they also released they're releasing that huge thing again.
Right.
It's very cool. Yeah, everyone's getting back to all the analog synthesizers. It's very cool.
Yeah, it was. Fender. I got to talk about Fender. They made this Michael Landau Hot Rod DeVille.
Okay.
The Hot Rod DeVille is probably the one of the best selling amps in the country.
It's just like a little different.
It's different. What they did is, if you've played a Hot Rod DeVille, you'll know that it has a really wonderful clean channel and sort of a weird drive channel. It's not like a distortion like you'd find in most amps. It's like this weird.
I think it always sounds like you're supposed to put a distortion pedal before that distortion kind of thing.
Right. The what's nice about the Hot Rod amp is that it sounds great with pedals.
Yeah.
So what this guy did is he asked them to take that drive circuit out. So now it's just two clean channels.
Oh.
Instead of having clean and dirty, he has clean and boost.
Okay.
Just a clean boost.
Everyone's doing the boost now.
Right. And they're making a new pickup, which I can't remember also, but they're putting like a humbucker in some of their standard strats that is designed to be better matched with the single coils. Because anybody who's ever played a strat with like two singles and a humbucker, you know that when you go to the single coil pickups, it sounds too different and you, right. and you have to like change your amp settings. So I thought that was cool. They also have like this 10 for 15 thing, which is 10 like sort of funky, like unique guitars for 2015.
Okay.
Like they have like a double cutaway telly.
Oh,
and
okay.
like they have like a Strat that looks like a skateboard or a surfboard or something.
Okay.
It's like they have like these like weird limited edition guitars. They also have like sandblasted oak guitars.
Oh, nice.
And guitars with like art on them. I think it's the David Lozo collection. They had some cool stuff. Gibson, basically, it's the models that Gibson is known for.
Or Gibson.
You know, I mean, they've put some tweaks on. They're beautiful. Yeah. I mean, I actually haven't gotten to play one of these, but I saw one of their Memphis models, and it was like a 175, an ES-175.
Okay.
But it looked like a guitar that's been in the case for 50 years.
Really?
But like, you know how like Fender will like relic something?
Right.
Like they'll put like dents in it and scratches and cigarette burns.
The worn finish.
And right. Everything. This is, they made it look, instead of going that route, they made it look like someone left this in a case.
Okay.
And it's mint.
It's a new old stock.
So they got like a patina on the hardware.
Okay.
You know, the finish is yellowed a little bit, but it's like not, it's.
Right.
I said this. It looks like new old stock. So right. I was kind of I was impressed by that. Rickenbacker has brought back F holes.
I because
supposedly
I saw that
went
too.
Away.
Okay.
So now they're back.
Okay. Cool.
I'm trying to think of now because see that was.
Did they also bring back some other model bass too?
Oh, bass. I don't remember. Oh, I didn't see. I understand something 4,000. after shooting for like 5 hours. I would steal an hour for myself. Like instead of eating lunch,
right.
I would look around the show more. Uh-huh. And that's when I looked at my stuff. I mean, Engel has a new amp. It's the Artist Series.
Okay.
It's really amazing. It sounds amazing. You know, although I've never played an Engel amp that sounded bad.
That is true.
You know, all their amps are great. I'm trying to think of what else I saw. I looked into that that Motu thing.
Okay.
Motu Monitor 8.
Yeah, they just came out with a bunch of great interfaces.
All that stuff's meant to work together.
Yeah.
So that's not really a good solution for. I know you said it. We should get it for BandGeek.
But it also works. It works separately too.
It does.
You can.
It will work as an interface, the Monitor 8, but it's not designed to. Like so, there's things. Right now, a lot of people have actually asked me this in my studio, and let me talk about what I'm using in my studio. We're talking about gear the whole episode. I have a PC that my friend Vinny Vitieri built for me. And it's smoking fast. I'm running Pro Tools on it, and I have a Avid 003 interface with a Mackie board that we use to monitor off of. I have an SSL preamp, which is currently not working. I have a Lucid Gen X 192 clock, which is currently not working. And as of today, I have a Behringer Ultra Gain Digital, which is currently not working. So my studio's in wonderful condition, and basically I'm going to have to end up recording everything on my Zoom. You know, I used the Zoom the whole NAMM show.
Yeah.
That was what I used. The Zoom is awesome.
Yeah.
Zoom H6. If you want to get into recording or podcasting, get a Zoom H6. It's so good.
Yeah.
I recorded everything on the show. The audio quality is stupendous. The microphone it comes with is amazing. It's
and you can
awesome.
Plug your own microphone into it.
You can plug your mics in. It's got phantom power. It's a home run. It's you know what? It's not only a home run. It's a no brainer.
Right.
It's a no brainer. It's
even if you have a studio, that's good to have that.
The first video I did at NAMM was the Yamaha drum trigger thing, and the guy says, "What?" So I needed a mic for myself.
Right.
The guy I had a mic came up with a lav.
Uh huh.
I had to
hear the drums.
I had to take stereo output from his drum module, and I had to mic up the drums.
The acoustic drums.
The first video of the day, of the show, I was using all six channels on the H6.
And it sounded awesome.
Awesome. Awesome. It was a total home run, that thing. So, but yeah, that's what I'm using. So I was sort of like looking for a new interface.
Okay.
So Andy, you suggested to me the Monitor 8, which I kind of like because we all be able to mix ourselves on the iPad. but it's
it has six headphone outputs on the front.
It's good for that, but I like listening. I like being able to listen to my mixer sometimes. And on this 003, there's a an aux in that I can switch between,
okay.
So I can choose if I want to listen directly to Pro Tools or listen to my mixer. And I wouldn't be able to do that with the Monitor 8 unless I like made a separate mix and burned one of the six monitor mixes on my aux.
No, except you could have there's also monitor outputs on the back that aren't the headphone outputs.
But I'd have to burn two inputs on the thing to send my mixer. So instead of having 16 inputs, it would go up to 14 inputs, and that's not enough.
Why would you burn two inputs?
Because there's no aux in. Like this thing, the 003 has an aux input.
Okay.
For monitoring separate sources. The Monitor 8 just has 16 ins. That's it. And we on the podcast, we use 16 ins.
I'm confused. I don't know what you...
Look, in my studio...
Why are you monitoring separate sources?
Because when I'm mixing, I don't want to have Pro Tools going through my mixer.
Right.
But when we're tracking, or I want to just play around, or I want to listen to my keyboard,
okay.
I want to listen to the output of this mixer.
No, the thing is, you don't need the mixer anymore.
Yeah, well...
You need the preamps.
But I like having the mixer.
Okay.
That's why I'm saying it didn't work for me
personally. But what I'm saying is the Motu, the way it works is that you don't have to listen through Pro Tools. It's a standalone mixer.
I understand that, but I feel like that's too big of a leap right now, and it would change the way I'm doing things.
Okay.
And I would like something that could fit into this. But I'm ready to get rid of this 003.
We had to stop five times tonight.
Yeah, but we found out that's because of the Behringer thing.
All right.
You know, when I asked Woody, Steve Lacera, the guy we had on this podcast before, mm-hmm. Mix Magazine Steve Lacera, he said, I told him I was having trouble with my rig. He goes, unplug that Behringer thing. I bet it'll work. Look, I love Behringer. I have so many Behringer products. I have the compressor. I have the mic preamps. I have the pedals. You know what I mean? I love their stuff, but... He might have been onto something. I'm just saying.
Anyway, Motu has a lot of awesome stuff.
You know what I might do?
And they all work together.
Cool. You know about Blackline Audio?
No.
They make cool stuff. They make like sort of high end preamps and compressors. Like they make like an 1176 clone, okay. Sort of. You know what I mean? And I reviewed some of those to work. They do a thing where if you send them your like 003. They'll change all the components inside of it and send it back.
Oh, nice.
So I'm thinking, like, if I don't find anything new that I like, I might just send them this and see what they do with it. I mean, I think they change the clock.
Right.
They change the preamps or something.
They just kind of upgrade everything.
It's not cheap, though. It's like $1,200.
Well, they're putting in high-quality components.
My friend Phil Maffa, who also writes for a lot of audio magazines, he was like, why would you do that? Why wouldn't you just buy a new interface?
Right.
But I'm thinking, like, if I can't find one that I like, maybe I will do that.
Right.
I mean, what do you think I should get?
I think the problem is that you get comfortable with the way your studio's running now.
Right.
And it's always tough if you don't have a exact replacement. If you have to bend your workflow, you kind of feel like, oh, it's going to slow me down a little bit because I already have it going this way. So it's tough because there are a lot of interfaces that have like the standard couple of pre's, extra analog ins, a couple of outs, blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of stuff out there now. And I got... I'll tell you from experience, I upgraded my system. I got the Motu 828 Mark III, hybrid, I don't know. And it's great. They make great stuff. And it works great with Pro Tools.
And I hear it works with PC too, which is nice for me.
Yeah.
Because like some of the stuff like...
They have a lot of different models.
Like Apogee and Universal Audio, not all their... Like Apogee, none of their stuff works with PC.
Right.
And Universal Audio, only some of it does.
Mm.
So that's kind of a bummer for me. But I blame Windows. I blame Microsoft because they made a shitty operating system in 08. And everybody said, I'm not running my audio rig off of that. I don't blame them. I'm on 7 still. I love 7.
Right.
I think 7 it was the greatest operating system. But I watched the keynote for 10.
Okay.
10 looks awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they got their shit together with that. So yeah, I got to get something new. I mean, basically, when we do a Band Geek podcast, I have my Mackie 1604, and we use the auxes to mix everyone's monitor mix, and it's chaos. And eventually, I mean, maybe I'll. I was looking at getting one of those like Behringer X32s,
right?
Which is sort of hulking. You know, it's kind of big, but everybody would be able to like mix themselves on their phones.
Yeah,
I think whatever the next unit I get, it'll have that capability.
Well, the new Line 6 pod thing. It has iOS connectivity, and so is pretty much everything else going to be happening.
I got to make a move soon. I mean, but like you said, I get very comfortable with my rig, and I like to know. Like, I don't want to. Even though it's funny because that's my job, I have to learn new pieces. I have to learn 5 new pieces of gear a day.
Yeah, except you, when you're down here, you have a certain workflow that you don't want to interrupt, and then it's going to slow down your work output.
I don't even want to fix things anymore. Right. If something stops working, I turn it off and I just use something else because I just want to go.
Right. Yeah.
You know, but I got to get some new stuff, I guess. So I guess that concludes our NAMM recap. Do you have any questions about NAMM or anything else to look out for you?
You didn't talk about any basses. Any basses?
Oh, that's right, because you're playing bass in your band now, right?
I did for one show.
And you like it? You're hooked?
Yeah, it worked out really good. I don't know what happened.
Here's what you should get.
We have one less guitar player, but I guess I'm the right bass player.
You're the guy. Well, you know what it is? You're talented enough to be able to fit in with that. So it's like you are the guitar player, but if need be, you can be the bass player.
Yeah.
Basses. Okay. I did play some basses. Music Man, they make something called the SLO.
Okay.
Which you should get.
Okay. What is it?
It's a Stingray with a Sterling neck.
Ah.
Do you like the Sterling neck?
The best of both worlds.
Do you like the Sterling neck?
I like the Sterling neck.
But you're also 6 feet tall, and right. The Sterling body looks ridiculous on you. So now you can get the Sterling neck with the Stingray body.
Okay. I kind of like the smaller neck with the like the bigger
although
body.
I'll tell you what bass that Amory almost bought, and I'm so mad she didn't buy it.
Okay.
The Big Al.
Ah, the Big Al.
They made a big, which is, the Big Al is this like 50s.
The Albert Lee.
Sci-fi looking, it's an Albert Lee body.
Body,
on
right.
a bass, but they made it in silver sparkle with black nice. Pickguard. That bass looked... It played great. It came with 3 singles, but you can get it with a standard like humbucking position, like pickup.
Right.
You should get that bass. Just get that bass.
And I could bring it to Artemis because it'll blend in.
No, but it's a cool, like I know you want to have a cool looking bass.
Yeah, yeah.
It's cool looking.
I've been looking at some like Fender P basses.
But I thought you have one already.
I do. I have the P bass special, but I think I want to get like a nice one.
The P-Bass Special is Mexican, right?
Yeah.
So you want an American one?
I might. I was also looking at the Jaguar bass, which is kind of cool.
That's a fun bass, and everybody who has one loves them.
You had one at the store. I went there last week, and I was fooling around with it. It's very cool.
You should get a Rickenbacker bass.
Should.
Although, I don't know what you'll do with it. I have a Rickenbacker bass. I love it, but it's like the scope of what it does is so small. Or, you know, what about a Spectre bass? What about something like that?
I'm thinking of getting like a Didi Ramone Precision.
Oh,
like
you want something simple?
A white one with the maple fingerboard.
Did you try the Roadworn?
No, I didn't.
See, I'm going to get one of those.
Okay.
I'm going to switch sides.
Okay.
I'm going to cross enemy lines from my Ernie Balls. Because the last like 10 guitars I've bought have all been Ernie Balls. And I think I'm going to buy my first Fender. I had a Fender. I've never bought a Fender.
Right.
I've bought Squires.
Is your lovely Squire Telly hanging above me?
I love that thing. It just doesn't stay in tune no matter what I do. I have to bruch over it one day. Maybe that'll make it stay in tune.
Have you ever changed the nut on that?
I think I got to do that. I got to put like all graphite saddles in the nut.
Yeah, get the graphite nut.
It'll look nice with that guitar. Black nut.
Yeah.
So I think I'm gonna buy a Roadworn Telly.
This has been your search, your long search for a Telly.
I wanted like a 60s Telly, but I can't afford that. So I'm just gonna get a Roadworn Telly.
You can.
And I'm gonna pretend it's a 60s Telly. Well, Roadworn, if you don't know what that is, Roadworn is when they beat the guitar up a little bit to make it look like it's been played on the road.
And you're going to go with a maple fingerboard?
Duh.
Duh.
Are we not men?
Well, like I just said, I'm looking that I might get a bass with a maple fingerboard.
Why don't you get a Nash?
I was looking at those too.
Get a Nash. Yeah. Talk to Danny Miranda. You should definitely get a Nash. There's a place in Jersey called Primax.
Okay.
That they have them. You make an appointment, you go there and you can play them.
Right.
Definitely, because you want something that's like, you know,
yeah,
broken in a little bit, right?
Yeah, definitely. I'm not opposed to sanding my own neck.
Mm-hmm. That sounded dirty. Okay, so that's it for the NAMM recap. You have any other questions?
Any other celebrity sightings besides
people you're hanging out with? I walked past about 20 people that I admire, and the only person I stopped to take a picture with was a stormtrooper guy. It was a guy in a stormtrooper costume. And I like, I'm walking past John Petrucci, right. Steve Morse, I see Jordan Rudess. I'm like, you know, Stevie Wonder's there. I'm just like, hey, stormtrooper, take a picture of the stormtrooper.
I remember walking past Stevie Wonder one of those times.
Yeah, so I
remember walking past Herbie Hancock at the airport one of those times, too.
I mean, I got a picture with Michael Anthony because I was playing a show with him. You were there. So I was like, this is Michael, and it's one of my favorite bass players.
I did see a picture of all you guys, all whatever, 18 of you guys.
Yeah.
It's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see, it was funny because after being there working all day and doing the product specialist thing, I just wanted to get out of there.
You didn't even want to play.
Like I looked around. I went to the booths of the companies that I deal with, you know, as an artist, but I was like so burnt that I couldn't even focus. You know what I mean? So I sort of missed a lot, but I was like, I'll look it up on the web when I go home. but I thought it was a good year for new products. There was a lot of cool stuff.
Obviously, the iOS integration has been around for a couple of years.
Yeah, I think.
Do you feel that it's getting better?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When the iPad first came out, people were saying, "Oh my God, we have to use this with music stuff,"
but everyone did that, but they didn't know
how to do it.
Right,
it was all useless. Now they're actually finding intelligent ways to do that. Like, first of all, you don't want to use your iPad's audio card. It's ridiculous.
Exactly.
So a lot of companies are making high-end audio cards that work with iOS.
Oh, awesome.
That are scalable, that you can, like, look at Apogee Duet. You could take that, you could plug it into your iPhone, but you can also plug it into your Mac. You know what I mean? And use it as a good audio interface for either. So the experience is the same on both devices. Line 6, doing the thing where now you can, you're not plugging your guitar into it, but you can control your foot pedal with it.
Right.
Great. Mixing monitors on that. That's a big thing. You know what I mean? Now all these companies allow you to do your own monitor mix on your iPhone because everybody's got one.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a step in the right direction. All right. We have to... this is Band Geek. We haven't played anything. We're not even... We haven't even set up any instruments.
Yeah.
Oh, man. What should we play? Do you want to be a dick right now and go on Facebook? And see what they say. This could bite us in the ass.
It could.
Okay, let's.
Why don't we do Shazam? That's a very.
That's a NAMM show song.
That's a NAMM show song.
I should just play Shazam then. I should just play the
recording. Just play the recording.
Play the recording. Here's me and Andy playing live right now. Well, let's see. Let me just do this as an experiment. We don't have to do it. Okay. I'm gonna make my status. Andy and I want to know what song we should play right now.
Who's going to respond first?
Muff. With something stupid.
So
I want to play that Don Henley song you were playing before.
Yeah, that's a long song. That might be tricky.
Oh, we have a time limit? Are we keeping it down to under 3 minutes?
It's involved.
Okay, hold on. Let's see. Let's see the comments.
Oh, so you just bought a lovely Martin acoustic.
I was thinking that.
Were you looking at did you notice anything that stood out? You're like, oh, I got the good one at home.
I mentioned it to the Martin guy, and he sort of like poo-pooed on it.
What did you
He
mention?
Didn't poo-poo on it. He goes, oh, it's a nice couch guitar. I'm like, couch guitar? This is a beautiful instrument.
You're like, actually, I've only played it on the couch so far.
Yeah, I guess he's right then.
I guess he's right.
I guess I'm the asshole.
I haven't taken it off the couch.
Okay, we have one request for Mississippi Queen.
Okay.
Which I sort of kind of know. I don't burn air now. Okay, the winner of our... I got one. The winner is... the winner is Mark Larson, who wants to hear Just What I Needed, which is a song I know already. So here we go. Okay, well, actually, this is cool, because we're going to use the Firehawk for the guitar, and Andy will use my SH-101.
Ah, see what
I did
back.
There? See what I did there?
I see.
Well, if I can't find the power supply, then Andy's going to use a facsimile of a SH-101. All right. Here we go, ready?
Yep.
Okay. I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time. Cause when you're standing oh so near, I kinda lose my mind, yeah. It's not the breath that you wear, it's not the ribbons in your hair. I don't mind you coming here and wasting all my time. Listening to Band Geek, this has been the NAMM special. Thank you to my co-host for today, Andy Ascolese.
You're very welcome.
I'm Richie Castellano. Thanks for listening to Band Geek.